I think I'm a little late. My apologies.
I would like to start straight into our subject matter. So as I told you last night, for those who were here last night, I wanted to explain to you, and of course those who weren't here last night and have arrived this morning, why we can't actually ever be happy here in the material world. In case you've noticed that for one reason or another you're not happy, sometimes you feel, I'm not happy, but I look to the left and to the right and I see that other people, they seem to be quite happy. And so if I just try a bit harder, or if I go somewhere else, or if I do something else, then I think actually I could make it. I could become happy here. So the subject matter of our class today, as I was explaining last night also, is summed up in the title. And the lecture is, Why You? And my husband said, why do you say you? Why don't you say we? Why we don't do something? And I said, no, it's why you don't do something. Because the fact is that each individual one of us, whether we have a we attached to us, a group, a family, any obligation, we, meaning all of us, will have to become a you at the time of death. We are responsible individually, each one of us, for our spiritual progress. So therefore, you, why you? Why you should transfer your attachment for happiness and security. Transfer your attachment for happiness and security to Goloka Vrindavan. So this will be the subject matter that I would like to speak on. And in the morning I would like to explain some of the reasons why we can't be happy here. And we may hear these things in the Bhagavatam class, we may hear them here and there, but we have to hear them regularly, otherwise we will forget them. And this is the purpose of sadhana practice, sadhana bhakti, is that we must hear and hear and hear again. Not one big dose. Just like if I told you all, we're going to feed you at breakfast time enough food for the coming year. So be happy, we will take our year's meal in a few moments, and there'll be nothing else for the rest of the year. Well, we would all die like that. So similarly, spiritually, we're not alive and vital and real unless we're hearing regularly. So the first lesson I would like to share with you, the negativities of the material world. And then this afternoon, I would like to begin a journey. And this journey is a most amazing and wonderful journey, because it will take us in the company of excellently exalted transcendental personalities. It will take us from here in this world right up to the paramount topmost place, which of course is Goloka Vrindavan. So that's one journey, but let me first share with you another journey. Now I'm sharing this with you without having asked my son's consent. So I'm praying and hoping that he will not be angry with me for sharing with you something that happened very recently that was an extremely profound experience for me. So recently my son, Jai Gurupad, who lives in Mumbai, he rang me up and he said, Mata, I just want to tell you something. I said, yes. He said, I'm about to start on a journey. I said, oh. He said, I have decided that because circumstances are what they are right now, I want to do something I've always wanted to do, and I'm going to leave home with nothing and walk south. This is my desire. I said, oh. So that following night, he actually did it. He put on a dhoti, which he's not usually always wearing. He shaved his head. He went to Goa on a bus without any money. He had enough money to get to Goa. He stayed the night in Goa. He packed his things together, a small two sets of clothes, a toothbrush, a cleaner for your tongue, a few other little things, a notebook and a pen. He put them in his backpack, and the following morning, at 4 a.m, he left the place he was staying and he started walking south. Now, he didn't have a mobile phone. He didn't have anything like that. And he had no money. So he started out. And when he rang me and told me he was going to do this extraordinary thing, it made me think, what am I doing? I'm sitting here comfortably with all my things around me, having a nice, comfortable spiritual journey. Very comfortable, very peaceful, everything is nice, no much austerity, a little bit here and there. And where am I going? Am I actually moving? Here's somebody who said, I'm going. And I began to very deeply think, how is my spiritual life going? So in the coming few days, I thought of him a lot, and I thought of him, I couldn't contact him, I couldn't find out what was happening. And I thought of myself, it was very symbolic. Am I actually willing to do something like this? And then on the third day, I received a phone call from my husband who said, your son is back in Mumbai. So I thought, oh. So then very soon after that, he rang me and he said, he was a little bit uncomfortable because I think he was feeling a little bit like he had failed. But as he explained to me the mechanics of what his journey eventuated into, I began to see that there were many principles that were very relevant to us on our spiritual journey also. He said, I started walking in the morning, and I walked 31 kilometers. I just kept walking and walking and walking and walking. He was working very hard. I kept walking, and all of a sudden, my left ankle became very, very, very sore, and I had to stop for the night. The next morning, I woke up. My left ankle was very, very sore. My knee was very, very sore. I had walked 31 kilometers, and I started out again. And the second day, I walked 15 kilometers. And after 15 kilometers, my other ankle broke down. So now both ankles are no longer functioning. So I was coming towards a temple, because you can only do something like this in India, because the culture is there to support somebody accepting renunciation and to respect somebody, especially a young Western man in a dhoti with a shaved head. It's most extraordinary. So he said, I came to a Ganesh temple, and as I was seeing the temple ahead of me, I thought, if in this temple there's somewhere to stay tonight, then I will stay the night and I will keep walking. And when I got there, there was nowhere to stay the night. And then, as fate would have it, just as I arrived, a car pulled up, and the car was going back to Goa. And so I took that as a sign from Krishna, not from Krishna, I took that as a sign that I should return to Goa where he began his walk because my feet were so sore. And so he returned to Goa, and eventually, quite soon after that, he returned to Mumbai. So when he was speaking to me, I was still seeing from this symbolic sense of my journey. So first of all, I congratulated him on even walking out the door like that. And then he said to me, well, I didn't know what I was going to expect. Perhaps if I had known, I wouldn't have had the courage to walk out the door. And then I said, perhaps you shouldn't have walked or worked so hard. And he said, well, I didn't have the quietude. I didn't have the peace on the inside to be able to stop. Because as soon as I would stop, I would think, well, what do I do now? Now what do? I have 4 hours I have to just sit here in a temple. What am I going to do? So I kept walking. And so then he said to me, which was very striking, he said, if I had either a spiritual desire, a searching, I was looking for something, or I had a destination that I had to reach. I had to reach that destination because his father had told him, why don't you go walk to Udupi? It's 100 and so miles, kilometers, whatever, you just walk to Udupi. But he said, but I didn't know, I didn't want to go to Udupi, I didn't have any desire of my own. So when it became difficult, I didn't have the determination to keep going. So he said, I felt quite bad with myself, you know, that I turned back. And I said to him, but you can now, with this knowledge of the experience that you had, you can consider how to do this again, if you want to. And he said to me, he said, my first impression was I'll never do this again. I've learned enough to know I would never do this again. But speaking to you about the practicalities, what would be practical, how to do this practically, I'm reconsidering whether it would possibly be in the future, it would be possible. But the point was that it was distress that turned him to his journey. He was in distress, and so he thought, what's the use? Let me just walk out. And of course it was momentary distress, nothing very, very deep or serious or traumatic. And so once that distressful moment passed, and he was feeling peaceful again with himself and happy and everything was fine, he didn't have any momentum. He didn't have the impetus to keep going. So perhaps all of you can, by hearing this, can think of yourself and think of, well, how if this applies to me on my spiritual journey? So first we need the desire to go somewhere, the curiosity to begin with, and more than that, the determination. Secondly, we might unfortunately need the distress. But unfortunately, the distress sometimes passes and then we lose our determination. Nevertheless, Krishna is so kind that there's adequate distress available. He will give it to you because we need that. That keeps us saying, yes, this is difficult, but it was more difficult there, so let me keep going. And thirdly, we really need to find somewhere we really want to go. If there's nowhere we really want to go, we won't go there because we don't have any impetus. So I wanted to begin by describing to you all the miseries, the miserable part. So as is my habit, I like to very much take to the folio and read from Srila Prabhupada's words. I enjoy putting in any kind of a word into the search engine of the folio and then hearing whatever Srila Prabhupada says on that particular subject. Because I accept that Srila Prabhupada sees everything totally differently than we do. He sees this world as an extremely transitory place, as an extremely uncomfortable place, as a place where none of us belong, and he sees us as souls, not as bodies, minds, and other designations. And so by hearing from him, either through reading from his lectures, selected quotes, or by reading the Bhagavatam itself, we too can become gradually transformed into seeing the world in the way that he sees it. We need his help. Without his help, it's very difficult to go anywhere. So in my reading, I collected a series of quotes, and if you'll be patient with me as I fumble around with them, I will share them with you. So the first thing is, we're in the material world, this we understand. What is the problem here? The first and most essential thing is this. Why should we leave here? Srila Prabhupada says, the ultimate problem is that we do not want to suffer. I hope we can all relate very easily to this. That's all. We want a comfortable, peaceful life. This is the ultimate problem, is it not? You think it over. We don't want to suffer. We want a very peaceful and joyful life. But it is not being possible within the material world. This is the problem. The living entity by nature, he is joyful. And now he'll give a very graphic example that some of us, the older ones of us, have some experience of, and the younger ones may have read in a history book. Just like in America, you have got experience that Mr. Kennedy, President Kennedy, he became the president after a very long struggle. He had a nice wife, children, honor, prestige, everything. And somebody was saying, telling me yesterday, that they took him as a very happy man. But within a second, it was all finished. He was driving in a procession. People were honoring him. He was sitting in his car. He was waving to all the people, all of his citizens who loved him. And there he was, and within 1 second, finished. So everyone is trying to be very happy and comfortable, but it is being finished within a second. Is there any disagreement on this point? Says Srila Prabhupada, and when Srila Prabhupada would say that, no one would disagree. Is there any disagreement on this point? That is the problem. And everyone is trying to solve their problem in his own way. This is material life. So this problem, Srila Prabhupada goes on to explain a little more. The Prabhupada says that hearing about and glorifying the Lord are identical with the transcendental nature of the Lord. And by doing so, one is in the association of the Lord. This brings a freedom from all kinds of fear. The Lord is the Supersoul or the Paramatma present in the hearts of everyone. He's with each one of us. This is so important to understand, that each one of us has a very personal, real relationship with Krishna. He knows us. It's not like, just like when we go into the temple and see Radha Vallabha. Everybody has their prayers, everybody has their concerns, everybody has their own vision even of the deities. So Krishna travels with us on our journey through life as we go here and there on the path. He travels with us. The Lord invites the association of all in His creation. This process of hearing about and glorifying the Lord is applicable for everyone, whoever he may be, and it will lead one to the ultimate success in everything in which one may be engaged by providence. There are many classes of human beings, fruitive workers, empiric philosophers, yogis, and ultimately devotees. For all of them, one and the same process is applicable. Everyone wants to be free of all kinds of fear. Here it is again. Everyone wants the fullest extent of happiness in their life. And the perfect process of achieving this, here and now, is recommended in the Bhagavatam, which is uttered by such a great personality as Sukadeva Goswami. By hearing and glorifying the Lord, all a person's activities can be molded into spiritual activities, and thus all conceptions of material miseries become completely vanquished. Now this is a wonderful quote about the importance of hearing. It's unfortunately not the quote that I intended to read to you now, so let me backtrack a little bit, because this is the solution. We want to hear more about the problem. And Srila Prabhupada explains that this process of hearing can give one apavargya. In the seventh canto, there is a verse where Sri Prahlad Maharaj calls Krishna apavargya sharanam. So this word apavargya is a very interesting word. Apavarga also means mukti or liberation. And of course, as devotees, we don't want liberation. Now, we could say, is that true? We don't want liberation? We don't want to get out of the material world? And the answer is yes. We don't want liberation without the service of Krishna. What would we do if we didn't have the service of Krishna? Just to get out of a difficult situation is not sufficient. We need to replace that difficulty with something very different, something very safe, something very sound, something very secure, and something very happy. Otherwise, what is the use of getting out of that situation at all? So this word, pavarga, is a very interesting word. And actually, as those here, we have so many from the background of India, so of course they know this. But for those who didn't, like myself, the Sanskrit and the Hindi alphabet is broken into five different lines, you could say, five consonants on each line. And each line is called a varga, like a group of different consonants. And the pavarga is the consonants related to the word pa. So it starts with pa, and then the next one is pa, ph. Please excuse my bad presentation of the sounds. And then ba, b, and then bh, pa. And then ma. Pa, pa, ba, pa, ma. This is called the pavarga. So the brilliance of the Sanskrit language and the Vedic culture is that all these things link together to give us a sense of understanding of the nature of reality. So this pavarga, or this line, this is given in the Vedic culture, in the Vedic literature, to sum up material life. Pa, pa, ba, ba, ma. In that, those five syllables, the whole thing is explained. This is extraordinary. What an amazing gift of knowledge. So what are they? Pa. Pa. Pa means you have to work very hard. What is the word for working very hard? Parishram. Parishram. You have to work very hard when you come to this world. And if you have to study, you have to study very hard. If you have to maintain your family, you have to work very hard for that. Something or another, you have to work very hard. If you have nothing else, you have to work very hard to maintain your body. You have to have food, and for that food you have to work. And if you're fortunate, by good fortune, you have so much money and you don't have to work very hard, still something will come up. You can be sure of it. Something will come up. So pa, and then pa, ph. It represents in the example, the foam that comes on the mouth of a horse when the horse is being pulled to run very fast, running, 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 and foam comes in the mouth. And Srila Prabhupada says, in humans this is called frustration. That no matter how hard you work, there'll still be so much frustration. And sometimes he says, even when somebody is working very hard, going to the job, doing this, doing that, this, that, 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 and they feel their tongue becomes dry. And so this also, this pa, this frustration, I work so hard, but I'm not peaceful working hard. And then Ba, I've forgotten the exact word that Ba represents, but Ba represents disappointment. Vyot, yes, thank you. Represents the disappointment that comes when after the frustration and the hard work, the results are never exactly what we wanted. They're never quite enough. Just as I said to you, if I say to you today, I'll give you enough prasadam for the coming year, it won't be enough because we need, we keep needing, we continue to need, and we don't necessarily get what we need here in the material world. And then pa means bhaya or fear. Because even if I have so much, even if I have accumulated so much, then fear comes. What will happen to it? What will happen to my children if? What will happen if I don't this? What will happen if I stop working? What will happen if I go and live in the temple? What will happen if I start thinking more and more about Krishna? What will happen to me? What will happen to my mind? What will happen to my family? What will happen to my prestige? What will happen to my body? What will happen when I get old? And what will happen at that final moment? When I have to go on my final journey, what will happen? And then Ma, the last of these five consonants, is death. So how can you be happy in a world like this? If you think about this for a while, if you just try to think about this, you can understand it's not possible to be happy here. This, by the wisdom of the Vedic knowledge and Vedic culture, these characteristics pervade the whole material world. Not India and Australia and America or just these planetary systems, but up and down. And Krishna himself, he signs a certificate, he signs his name on it and says, this place is temporary and full of miseries. Don't stay here. Please don't stay here. But in our own ways, we say, no, 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 no. I know what to do. I can make myself happy in this way, that way, this way, that way. I can make everything work nicely. I'm quite secure. And other people seem to be happy, so I'm sure I can make a go of it. But Krishna is saying, this won't work. Please transfer your desire, your attachment, for happiness and for security to your natural home, Goloka Vrindavan. So then, the cause of this fear Srila Prabhupada explains that fear is the result of forgetting Krishna. So whenever you feel frightened in any way, you should understand, what is this? I've forgotten Krishna, and therefore this fear comes. Fear which results from forgetfulness of Krishna is removed by bhakti. Fear arises out of absorption in something other than Krishna. One who is distanced from the Lord by his maya experiences confusion and forgetfulness. Therefore, the intelligent person who worships the Lord by exclusive devotion treats his spiritual master and his worshipful deity as his very self. Fear is fear of losing. What will I lose? The individual who is averse to serving the Lord is bewildered by the illusory idea. This is our problem, very simple. Is bewildered by the illusory idea that he or she is an independent doer. And this is really puzzling, I have to admit, even myself when I stop and try and think about this, that I'm bewildered by the idea that I'm an independent doer. I do things independently of Krishna. Does that mean I can't do anything? Does that mean that I have no freedom? I just have to sort of mechanically follow some rules and regulations, and anything outside of that is me thinking that I'm an independent doer. And Krishna, he's there in the form of the deity, he's there in the form of the Bhagavatam. But how do I keep that with me all the time? Srila Prabhupada says, as such, when we think ourselves independent in doing things, he forgets his true spiritual identity. And he is affected by the fear that arises from attachment to the body and its extensions and the prospect of losing them. Since all these problems are the work of the Supreme Lord's illusory energy, the clear thinking individual turns to the Lord and worships him as his God, his guru, his worshipful object, and the supreme repository of his love. And by doing that, illusion and fear will no longer trouble you. So Krishna is saying, turn to me. Turn and face me. Don't have your back to me trying to solve your problems yourself. You will never do it, because the material world is composed in this way. You cannot get free of this. It is an illusion here that you can find happiness. Turn to me. Your illusion will go. Your fear will go. Your security will appear. And you'll know what to do. He's not telling, and he never told Arjuna, just leave this whole world behind. Go to the Himalayas, sit down and meditate. He never said that. Arjuna kept saying that. Can't I leave all this behind? And Krishna said, no. You have to learn how to do it for me. Do it for me. And Arjuna was thinking, this is too hard, because on one side I have my attachment, my family and everything, and then you're saying, do it for me. This is very confusing. It would be easier for me to leave all of that and then just... And Krishna said, no, you have to learn to fight for me. You have to learn to live your life for me. The living entity abandons Krishna and becomes absorbed in other things. And as a result, his memory is perverted and he suffers. By taking shelter of a spiritual master, he begins to hope for Krishna's mercy. And he takes up single-minded bhajan of Krishna, which leads him to Krishna's side. So I find for myself that it's very important to regularly understand that there is no barrier from Krishna's side. There's no obstacle from Krishna's side. The door's open. But I would like him to come into my life, and I'll tell him what to do, how he should fix things up so that I can remain independent. Is it logical? I want him to serve me so I can be independent. There's a contradiction there in my thinking. So Krishna remains ever independent, ever the supreme, ever he remains everywhere and everything. He remains also in his own abode. He remains also available to us through within our heart. He's so accessible. Why isn't he accessible to me? Why don't I want him? This is simply our, every one of us, our question, or it should be our question. And Srila Prabhupada will explain to us so many things, but ultimately, when we've heard so many logical things, we have to learn to get to know him. We have to learn to hear about him, find out about him, and find out scientifically about him. Not just in some kind of a culturally sentimental way. Oh, Krishna's like this and like that. I remember one time speaking to one elderly lady and she told me, I believe that God is all love. He loves everyone. He doesn't mind if we eat animals. He knows we need for food. He doesn't mind that. He doesn't mind this. And I remember thinking at the time, this is not scientific. This is a faith in an imaginary God. We don't need more of that. We need to understand Krishna as Krishna himself says and through his devotees and how they tell us that Krishna feels and how Krishna is acting. So please let me read you a little bit more. Srila Prabhupada explains that the Supreme Person is Krishna and Krishna confirms it in Bhagavad Gita, Mata Parataram Nandyat. There is no authority superior to me. Unfortunately, because we are envious, we don't accept Krishna as the Supreme Person. So do you feel yourself to be envious of Krishna? Do you perceive it in yourself? I know I perceive it in myself. It comes as a deep-rooted resistance to taking Krishna consciousness practices very seriously. I do them because I should do them, and they bring me some security and some happiness by doing my Krishna conscious sadhana. But I never have a feeling that I should give everything to Krishna. I feel like he should take care of me. I like to keep myself in the center of my thoughts and in the center of my prayers. And I do service, particularly if that service is giving me some pleasure. I like that. I say to people, I like this kind of service, I don't like that kind of service. Why do I like this kind of service? I don't like that kind of service. Oh, that's my nature. This is how I am. And I don't think that actually this is my envy of Krishna at work. Unfortunately, because we are envious, we don't accept Krishna as the Supreme Person. We say, why should Krishna be the Supreme Person? Somebody else may be supreme. That is envy. We begin by being envious of Krishna, and then we expand our envy in so many ways. In ordinary life, we are envious of our friends, or our father, even our son. What to speak of others, businessmen, teachers, so on. We think, why should anyone go ahead of me? This is material consciousness. So we don't like to think like this, especially as devotees. We don't, when we see these qualities in ourselves, we don't become happy. But people who are not interested in spiritual advancement, they thrive on these qualities. This is what gives them the motivation for their lives. Why should he be in the highest position in this organization? I can reach that spot. I can take his job. I can have his facilities. And then they make a challenge at a competition and they go like that, and they go like that their whole lives. But as devotees, we've learned that this is not very desirable for us spiritually to be envious of others. And so we're trying our best to remove these qualities from the heart. But we should understand that this is what has brought us here into the material world. Krishna says, you want? You want this? You want that? All right. You go. I'll take care of you. You go. You experience it for yourself. You try for that. And then when difficulties arise, what do we do? Examine our own heart and see. What do we do? Do we think, oh, this is because of my envy towards Krishna that this has happened? Or do we think, oh, this is not fair. Why didn't Krishna take care of this better? Why isn't this going like that? Why is it not happening right? And we become upset. We should look at these things in in our own heart, because when we see things that we're doing that are not favorable for our devotional life, it's a wonderful opportunity. It's a wonderful thing to see these things. Because now I've got something to ask Krishna to help me with, and he will. But if I don't see them, if I have so many bad habits or so many wrong conceptions or misunderstandings or unscientific understandings of the truth, and I don't see any of them, then I'll just go on in my own way, trying to solve my problems in my own way, and I'll become a stubborn old man or a stubborn old lady with many, many, many opinions of how things should be. But if I see them, I can say, oh Krishna, look at this, look at that. How can a person like me make any progress at all? You have to help me. Please help me. So of course we understand that this is diametrically opposite to the way that you're educated in universities and schools all over the world. This is the diametric opposite way to look at the world. You should see yourself that you can be successful. You should rise up the ladder of success, enjoy life to the max. No. Because you can't be happy here. So then the question may be asked, how does a pure soul see? How does he see? We know how we see. How does he see? Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur tells us that Krishna is the spiritual master of the three worlds. He protects us. He's known as a Vishvambhar because he maintains us. The universal creation has its origin in him. And ultimately everything returns to him. So he's everything. The whole universe is resting in him. Everything that we see as independent of him is within him. He's everything. The entire creation is situated within Krishna, and all living beings, including ourselves, are therefore his servants. Krishna awards the ultimate goal of life to his devotees, who have full faith in him. So, have full faith in Krishna. You have taken your birth. This is ourselves. You have taken your birth so that you can offer devotion to Krishna. Without devotion to Krishna, says Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the whole world is a lie. So Srila Prabhupada also tells, that if the important point is to take shelter of advanced and serious devotees. Your devotees, he's saying, are an aspect of your divine glory. May they always give me their blessings. If they do, I shall keep moving. This is a prayer actually. If they do give me their blessings, I will keep moving in the direction towards Krishna. And I will eventually attain his lotus feet. This is how we should feel. If I keep moving in that direction, I will definitely attain his lotus feet. And to do that, I need blessings. I need the blessings of Srila Prabhupada. Without the blessings of Srila Prabhupada, what will I do? I need the blessings of my guru. I need the blessings of all the devotees. Or else I will fall very firmly flat on my face. And not one ankle will become painful. Both ankles will become painful. And in 2 days' time, I will return to my house and say, Krishna consciousness is very difficult. I don't know if I can take it more seriously than just coming to the temple on Sunday and chanting a few rounds, and I have to maintain my family and so many other things, and I'll do the best I can, but Krishna consciousness is very difficult. So from my son, I learned such a valuable lesson from his attempted journey. I learned that I should be more prepared than I am. I should be more serious than I am. I should understand where I want to go and why I want to go there. And I should understand why I cannot be happy in the material world. One last point on this before we finish, because I want to try to share with you this sense that it can't work out for us here. So the Prabhupada says, in the material world there is always anxiety and fearfulness in the hearts of the living entities. But the Lord Himself is supremely fearless and always awards the same quality of fearlessness to His devotees. Mundane existence, life in this world, is a kind of fear because all bodies, we all have a body. Maybe there are some of us in this room who don't have body. But then we have a subtle body. But we have both bodies. We're so fortunate. We have a body on, a gross body, so we can march around and do things. And we have a subtle body so we can think about things and contemplate and try to understand the mysteries of the universe and try to work out how to make our life just how we want it. So we have a subtle body that we're wearing, and then we're wearing a gross body. And this subtle body and gross body are completely separate to the soul, in the same way as the body and the dress is different. I can change my dress, but if I try to change my body, there will be another problem. So similarly, we can change our body, we can get another body. In fact, we'll be forced to change our body. But we as souls, we do not change. We do also not lose our pure spiritual identity at any time. It only becomes covered. Covered once, covered twice. And now what do? We believe in the covering. And we forget. We forget our actual purity, our reality, and we become absorbed in trying to enjoy in this way. Mundane existence is in itself a kind of fear, because in all mundane bodies, the effects of birth, death, old age, and disease always keep a living being, Srila Prabhupada says, compact in fear. Compact in fear. Compact in fear. And if you think this life is very difficult, don't worry, you'll get another one. You'll have another one, and another one, and another one. This is your one option. You can have another one, and another one. And that one will keep you also compact in fear. In the mundane world, there is always the influence of time, which changes things from one stage to the other. And the living entity, although being avikar, or unchangeable, suffers a great deal on account of the changes of time. So perhaps we can all think of this, and we can see even at a young age how we've suffered something because of the changes of time. I remember, it's quite striking to me that I still remember this, but I was, I must have been around about 6 or 7 years old. And I went with my mother and father and my brothers to visit one aunt who lived in an apartment. Well, everyone in India lives in an apartment. But I lived in a house. And I was so small, because a child's brain is so small, everything seems very enlarged. Everything is much bigger than them. So I was so small, we went to her house, to her apartment, and it was very different from our house. And in my mind, I conceived of the idea that I would like to stay overnight with her. So I asked my mother and father, can I stay with her tonight? And my mother and father thought about it, and then I thought, oh, tomorrow is Monday, I have to go to school. So when they were going to ask her, can she stay overnight, and she had already actually offered, and that was what had prompted my interest, I said, but tomorrow, I have to go to school tomorrow. In my mind I was thinking, I have to go to school tomorrow, so I said, no, I don't want to stay overnight. And then we got in the car. Now this sounds all very silly when you hear an adult speaking, but if you had a little child telling the story, it would make a lot more sense. We got in the car, we're driving home, and my mother said, all right, what will we do tomorrow, Sunday? And all of a sudden I realized it wasn't Sunday already, it was Saturday. And I had missed this opportunity. And that simple, very insignificant experience, I can still vividly feel the disappointment I felt when I was 7 years old. So if you have any kind of introspection, you can think of something in your life that really disappointed you due to the movement and changing of time. And ultimately, everything is going to be moved away from you as your body starts to deteriorate, it gets older, your back starts to ache, your teeth start to get loose, your eyesight isn't so good anymore, your memory starts to go. You look at young children and you think, oh, look at all the energy, that's amazing. Or you look at young men and young women and you think, how can they do that? Look, they can run and jump. And I used to do that. And in this way, as we look around us at the world and think, that's amazing what people can do. Things that you did yourself easily before. We're really burying ourselves into burning out on the disc of our head, the next birth, the desires for our next birth. I wish I had been born in India. It would have been so much easier to be Krishna conscious. I wish I had been a man. It's so hard being a lady. I wish I had been a woman. It would have been so nice. It's so hard earning all the money as a man. On and on and on and on. So many different wishes. And we're actually burning the CD, which will form our next birth. It's coming because of that. My goodness, this problem applies to all of us. Do you want to keep doing that? Do you want to keep revolving samsara dava, samsara, round and round and round, birth after birth? Or would you like to find out how to get off this painful journey? And how to actually go home? Srila Prabhupada says, in the mundane world, there is always the influence of time. In the changing effects of eternal time are conspicuously absent in the immortal kingdom of God, which should therefore be understood to have no influence of time and therefore no fear whatsoever. In the material world, so-called happiness is the result of one's own work. One can become rich by one's hard work, but there will always be fear. What will happen to my money? I should make a clever investment here. I should be very careful. What will happen in the future? There will be fear and doubt as to the duration of one's happiness. But in the kingdom of God, there is no endeavor. One does not have to make any endeavor to attain a standard of happiness. Why? Why don't you have to endeavor to be happy there? Because this is what we need to understand. Happiness is my eternal true nature. I'm essentially happy. Sat, Chit, Ananda. This Ananda feature, I am actually by nature naturally happy. But I have come into the material world with my material plans and the obstacles that occur, and then this body, and then the mind, and then the hard work, and the foam from the mouth, and everything else, the fear, the this, the that, the this, the that. And I forget that I'm actually inherently, naturally happy in my relationship of loving service with Krishna. Happiness is the nature of spirit, as explained in the Vedas. Happiness in spiritual nature always increases in volume with a new phase of appreciation. There is no question of decrease in bliss. There is no question of unhappiness in the spiritual world. Now, I think that I will slowly wind up this class and ask for questions. But when we share this afternoon and tomorrow morning, the journey that we're about to take by the side of Narada Muni, who is going to go on a journey to find out which devotee has got the most of the Lord's mercy, which devotee has Krishna been most merciful to. And obviously the devotee that he's been most merciful to is his best devotee, right? Which devotee got the highest marks in this examination? That's the best devotee. So in a sense, Narada is looking for who is the best devotees of Krishna. And you're going to hear on this journey many people speak, because he keeps going from place to place trying to find out who that is. And many of them will express unhappiness. So I want to warn you, when you hear of their unhappiness, I will warn you again when we get to the journey. But their unhappiness is not like our unhappiness. In their unhappiness, in the unhappiness of separation from Krishna, they feel higher and higher and higher moods of ecstasy. Because in that mood of unhappiness, Krishna is with them. The depth of their meditation is like that. So if we undertake that journey in our own lives towards Krishna, we may be frightened, fearful, but there may be some unhappiness. There may be some unhappiness. But if we continue, that unhappiness will turn into the greatest satisfaction and the greatest good fortune for ourselves and for all those for whom we have affection. So Krishna is calling us onward. Be prepared. Be wary of thinking that their unhappiness is like our unhappiness. Their pleasure is like my pleasure. Their love is like my love. Because Srila Prabhupada will tell you very firmly, there is no love in the material world. There is no love in the material world. And there is only love on the platform of devotion to Krishna. I want to stop a little early and ask if anyone has any questions. Because this is very important subject matter. Sometimes we feel like maybe, oh, I've heard this before. But it's very important for this to penetrate into our consciousness. Any questions? Yes.
Your journey.
Individualism
comes here, right?
Yes.
At the same moment, you said that this journey, basically in this, we need help of Srila Prabhupada.
Yes.
Okay. So it no longer becomes that individual thing. There is a companion, there is the Guru factor here.
Yes.
There is Srila Prabhupada. So this is not individual again. No longer becomes individual again. I wanted to get some clarification there.
In our philosophy, in our Krishna conscious philosophy, we accept the principle of achintya veda aveda tattva. This means that contradictory things are true at the same time. And practically you see this in the material world. Contradictory things are true at the same time. So at the same time, it is our journey alone, because we are the one who has to want to go. If we don't want to go, we don't have to go. We can stay here. That's the part that's difficult, because there's lots of nice things here, we think. So why not just stay here? Or I can move slowly, little bit by little bit. But Krishna is saying, no, no, no. This is not a happy place, don't stay here. So on one side, we have to digest that ourselves and accept that, yes, actually I have to make this journey. So some part of it, yes, it is each person's own individual journey. Simultaneously, it is a journey that is taken with others. It is a journey that is taken with Srila Prabhupada. It is a journey that is taken with devotees. It is a journey that is not taken alone. But both of these elements have to be examined. The individual nature of my journey and the fact that I take this journey with the devotees. If one of these is weak, the journey won't continue. Oftentimes, I see devotees think devotee association, not in Melbourne of course, but in many places devotee association is something kind of social. You know, we talk about this and that and do this and we do that together and we have picnic together or we do something. But it's not focused, it's not firmly focused on how we as a group are going to go back to the spiritual world. That's not the focus of the community. But the community is still there and it's valuable. So then, I would say one must examine one's individual focus of these two things. Am I serious enough? How can I be more serious? And other people, maybe they need to examine how they function within the association with devotees, how they appreciate the devotees. Again, in Melbourne, both of these things are very healthy. But in some places that I have visited, maybe both of these things are not very healthy, and then a devotee is feeling weak. So yes, it is our individual journey, it's your journey, and yes, it is not taken alone. Both are correct. You had another question?
Yes, that goes for the last statement that you made. Of course, you quoted Srila Prabhupada there is no love in the material world.
Yes, the statement that there is no love in the material world. Yes. Yes.
We say that every living entity has the localized Paramatma with him.
Yes.
And when we refer to Krishna, we also say he's all love.
He's all love. Yes.
So he's here with us.
Yes.
We are in the material world.
Yes.
There's no love in the material world.
If we develop our sense of loving him, that's not considered material. Material life, there's an inherent reason why Srila Prabhupada explains that there's no love in the material world. I'll put it in my own words because I've thought about this sometimes. It's like if I was to take each one of you and put you in a room alone, and then tell you to have a relationship with each other, and there's no mobile phones, there's no modern technology. You're all in a room alone, have a relationship with each other. Difficult? Difficult? I put you in that room over there, and there's your mother in that room over there, and your father over there, now have a relationship. You can share some love. Is it difficult? Yeah. Difficult? So this body is like an encapsulation of the soul. And that's our condition. We're each encapsulated, like in a capsule. One body, one body, one body, one body. And then we relate to each other as bodies. But we're not bodies. So how can there be love? How can you taste this taste of a rasgulla if somebody wraps you up in plastic like they do the suitcases at the airport and then put out your tongue and there's a plastic sheet. Now try this. You can't. So there's something inherently disappointing in the material world. And you say, can't we have a relationship with Krishna? And the answer is yes, because he's within that capsule. Each individual can have their own individual relationship with Krishna within their material body, within the material world. But they have to do it in the right way. They have to try in their very best to become a servant of Krishna. Not to call Krishna, come and solve my problems, but please let me offer some service. So this is the next step.
how our attitude has to change. And then, yes, you can experience love even within the material world. Because it no longer appears material to you. It's Krishna's, and he can do with you as he wants. And then that pavarga, those five different symptoms, they no longer affect you in the same way. Everything turns into one's devotional offering. So this is the hope, yes. But sometimes we need to emphasize the miserable nature of it. And Srila Prabhupada saw us as young. We were all young. I was 21 when I first met devotees. When I look at pictures, my children don't look like that. I see a picture of myself, I think, oh, I looked like that once. We were very young, and so Srila Prabhupada, in his gravity, he wanted to establish for us very firmly these Vedic principles, this transcendental knowledge, the difference between matter and spirit, the material world and the spiritual world, based on Bhagavad Gita and Krishna's own words, not just on his own feelings, but based on the authority of Shastra. Yes.
Madhavi, Srila Prabhupada writes somewhere that the closest that love in this material world comes to the love of Lord Krishna is the love of a mother towards child. I have heard this.
Yes.
How do we understand now, as any parent, even if the son or daughter wants to stay away from the parent and has taken that, made the conscious choice, the parents would, though they have this desire that ideally we should stay together, but they wouldn't mind if they are eternally happy in that sense, even having made a choice away from them. So in this context, how do we understand the Lord's movement for us? In short, why has this material world been created as Dukkhalaya Mahashashwara?
Srila Prabhupada, one time, I remember I was driving somewhere and I was listening to a lecture. And unfortunately, I would not be able to recreate the experience because a lot of it was in the sound of Srila Prabhupada's voice. But he was describing how a father will tell to his son, if the son says, I want to do this, I want to go out of home, I want to do something. And the father will say, no, please don't do this. My dear son, don't do this. This is not a good idea. This will not be good for you. And the boy will say, yes, yes, I want to do this. I really want to do this. And he will insist on doing it. And then the father will say, all right, you can go. What can I do? So if the living entities who have independence by nature want to leave Krishna's service, shouldn't he make an arrangement for them? If they have independence, they have to have another alternative, or they have no independence. You follow? So he has to make an arrangement. We would like him to make an arrangement that was happy. We would like him, as I was saying, we would like him to serve us, make a nice happy arrangement, so I don't have to go back to him. But he can't do that because we're inherently jivas. We're infinitesimal parts of him. And he's inherently the supreme. So how can he who's the supreme, the owner and controller and master of everyone, become under this infinitesimal jiva's control? It's crazy. We're crazy. We want him to come down and now serve me. He's the master of everything. Or if he's not going to do that, I don't want to see him at all. I don't want to believe there's a master. I want to accept that there's no controller in this world. There's no creator. There's nothing. There's just me and whatever I want to do. Right? But he has to make an arrangement for us, otherwise we would be destroyed by our desire not to serve him. And he doesn't want to destroy us. So this is not what Srila Prabhupada was speaking about that struck me. Srila Prabhupada said, he's so kind. He'll go with you. He'll sit with you as a friend and wait until you come to your need for his advice, and then he will give you instruction. He'll stay with you. So this is what really struck me. I'm thinking how unkind Krishna is because I have so many sufferings in the material world. So how would a kind father do this to somebody? I'm thinking that way, how would Krishna do this to somebody he loved? Why should I be nice to him? He's, look what he's given me. And he's thinking, Prabhupada is thinking, he's so kind. He's gone with you. He's just waiting for you to turn to him. So how would a kind father not want to do that? But we have not got the power necessary to go with our son wherever he wants to go and wait with him. But Krishna has. What do you think? It's true, isn't it? We have to change our way of understanding and then we'll be happy. Yes.
In the 8th or the 12th chapter, Krishna says, Paschadesha Kalesha Mahamarishma Yudhisha, and he'll put a Manobuddhi and he will come back to me. In other words, whatever duties you have to discharge,
yes,
you discharge it in the mode of the service unto him, as an offering
to him. Yes.
And in this way, he will attain you.
Yes.
And he gives the guarantee.
Yes. Yes.
Now, practically, how do we look at it? In the sense, does it mean that what he's trying to say is, discharge your duties at home and work in the mood of as a service unto him, as an offering unto him,
yes,
without expecting anything in return.
Yes.
Because when you don't expect anything in return,
yes,
then it
obviously don't
means,
take the fruit.
Exactly, which means
yes,
it's really done as an offering unto him.
Yes, that's correct.
That being the case,
yeah,
how do we actually interpret this particular shloka?
It's not a question of how do we interpret it, it's how do we do it.
No.
Krishna is saying, you do your duty, don't take the fruit. The fruit is mine. So it's not yours, you cannot take the fruit. The fruit belongs to me. But do your duty and offer it to me. Don't give up your service, do your service, give the fruit to me, it's mine. If you don't give it to him, you're a thief. It's his. Now I say, not how do I interpret that? It's quite clear. How do I do it?
Exactly.
Yeah. That's
how do we do it? That's
how do we do it? Our heart has to become purified. And Srila Prabhupada, in some of the quotes that I haven't read, he speaks about this, that our heart has to become purified. And this is the this is actually, he says, this is the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement. And that's the beginning of our Krishna consciousness, to do our duty here in this world nicely and give the fruit to Krishna. That's the beginning. We have to go even much higher than that. And then I think to myself, well, how am I going to do that if this very first step is so difficult? So Srila Prabhupada says, that requires purification, it requires practice. You have to work at that. But it's true, it's a very difficult thing to do. Unless one is sattvic. If one is very sattvic, then one does activities just because they're meant to be done. But if one is rajasic or tamasic by nature, then when it's tamasic, one doesn't do anything. And if one is rajasic, of course he wants the fruit. That's why he's doing it. Just think, I was thinking about that one day. How would you ever become fruit-free-less? Not wanting the fruit. How would you do that? You plant a tree. You don't plant a tree and pour the water and do everything. And then when the apples come on the tree, you say, oh, I don't want those. You did want them. That's why you planted the tree. We came here because we wanted something. So how do we become free of this desire for the fruit? And Krishna says how. You don't just let the apples rot on the tree. You take the apples off the tree and you offer them to me first. And then you give them to others. And this is the process, this is our practice, how to do this. And it requires the blessings of other devotees who are practicing for one to get the strength even to understand the concept right. Yes? But it can be achieved. It's natural, it's possible. We can do it. Difficult. your look on your face is the same as the look in my mind. They may be able to do it, I don't know how I'll ever be able to do it. But Krishna is saying, you can do it, I'll help you. I'm very favorable to you, I'm your friend. I can give you the support to do it. But we have to turn to him if we want to be able to learn to do that. One last question? Yes.
Regarding the fruit.
Fruit.
Offering the fruit to the
Lord. Yes.
The self, the word. Depending on the duties, the fruit can be good or bad.
Depending on the duties, the fruit may be good or bad. You may have planted an apple tree or you may have planted a garlic plant.
can we offer, if it is either good or, of course good is fine, but even if it is bad, can we still offer it to the Lord? Like for example, the Mahabharata war, it has negative effects on the of course the good part is, of it is to establish dharma.
Who is that? Who has? Bharat, did you say?
Mahabharat.
War. Yes, yes. The war had negative effects.
Yes. Krishna has, embraced it to establish dharma.
Yes, yes.
It has resulted.
It has negative effects as well.
But still,
yes.
We can offer it.
Yes. Well, the thing is that Arjuna didn't want to fight. Krishna didn't want the fight. It wasn't like as if Krishna said, this is a very good idea, this will establish dharma. He didn't say that. He wanted to establish dharma without the fight. But the adharmic people wanted the fight. And so then when the fight was inevitable, then Krishna said, yes, now you must fight for me. Because the adharma must be removed. So from our offering to Krishna, the adharmic part gradually has to be removed. So that our offering is dharmic. But in the beginning, sometimes all we have to offer is something that's, you could say, contaminated. Sometimes people have a job that they shouldn't. It's not a proper job for a devotee to have. And they have to remain there for some time until they can adjust their circumstances. So they can begin the process of offering to Krishna. But along the way, they have to become gradually more dharmic. We can offer all the fruit to Krishna, everything, if we're completely pure. If not, we have to follow the rules and regulations of improving the dharmic quality of our offering to Krishna for his pleasure. Does that answer your question? Thank you. All right. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Goa Premanandi. Hari Hari Go. Thank you.
Please be happy here.